So we were in the halacha section of Perek Mem Dalet. It was not easy. Okay, there is, if one looks in the Torah Tamima, which is the book that quotes all of the Gemaras that are connected to the Psukim, there is nothing really on this Perek. A couple things having to do with the word or in the beginning of the Perek, but not nothing really there. But I was just thought about it outside. Wait a second. We have something very interesting going on in this Perek. We have this fellow, Yosef. Binyamin is being taken by Yosef, and Yehuda offers himself to be taken in the stead of Binyamin. Right? It seems to be what's going on here. Right? Are you allowed to do that? Was Yehuda's actions, Yehuda's request, was that permissible for him to say, "Oh, take me instead of Binyamin"? I looked around to see if anybody took halachic literature from this. We just looked at the story. I couldn't find anything. So I was thinking, plus there are some things that are vague about the story. Number one, Binyamin was being taken as a slave. He wasn't really being taken as a... he was taken as a captive that is risked to his life, or he was taken as a prisoner, which presumably he would have lived for a while. Right? That's all Yosef said. Yosef said, "Oh, we're not going to kill him. We're going to take him as an eved." Find that that's probably what was the fact. Second of all, whose life was actually in danger? If one looks through the psukim, there's only one person's life who the pasuk describes as being in danger. Who is that? It's not Yosef. It's not Yehuda. It's not Binyamin. No. Yaakov. Right? Yaakov. Remember, that was the claim. Yehuda said that if we come back and we don't have Binyamin with us, so our father is going to die. So, and he said that it's almost a vadai that our father is going to die. So Yehuda is willing to, I think it would be considered a risk of one's life to enter yourself into an Egyptian prison. So he is willing to risk his life, not necessarily to save the life of Binyamin, but to save the life of Yaakov. Right? That might be a halakhic equation that a person can make. So with that in mind, we could then enter into the lachosav, is such a thing permissible? Is one permitted to risk one's life in order to save the life of another? Or not just is permitted, there's actually three questions. Number one is the person permitted? B, is the person obligated? And then there's, in the middle, is it considered appropriate? I mean, is it a good thing? Right? Things that might be permitted might not necessarily be recommended. So is it required, recommended, or allowed, or none, right? For a person to risk their life in order to save the life of another. So if one thinks about this question, there really are a conflict of two different Gemaras that sort of come together, that one has to resolve the distinction with what?
You have to give up your life. In other words, if you know you that, let's say it's not you're risking, but you know pretty sure you're going to give up your life.
Right.
Somebody else.
Right. So in a way, that is the flip side of the other question. What question is that the flip side of? Can I give someone else's life up in order to save my own? Right, so we assume not. It may not. Why not? What is the Gemara gives a reason why not. First thing, puts a gun to my head and says, "Kill him, or we're going to kill you." Right. So one is not permitted to kill him, right? Because the Gemara says, "Why is his blood redder than yours? How do we know whose blood is redder?" So therefore, you're not going to go in and kill him. Now, the Gemara does go on and say, "What if a person says, listen, you stand right there, and we're going to push you off of this roof, and you're going to land on Shlaimi." Right? While you land on Shlaimi, he is going to die, and you are going to live. So the person then allowed to say, "No, don't do it, kill me rather than push me off." So that they assume, no, that he is permitted to say, "Look, I'm going to stand here. You do whatever you want. You can kill me, you can kill him, right? But I'm just going to stand here and not lift a finger." That's probably what the law is in those scenarios. Probably what the law is just stand still, and whatever happens, happens. Right? But is a person actively allowed to put one's life in danger in order to save somebody else? So why would we think not? So it's not actually that Gemara, but rather there is another Gemara in Bava Metzia, famous Gemara, where the famous story of the two men that are walking in the desert, and there's only one bottle of water between them. So who gets that bottle? Well, not between them. One person has a bottle of water, and the other person doesn't. Right, so there's three possibilities. Number one is that they share it, and they're both going to die. Now, the second possibility, which is suggested, second possibility is to give it to the other guy. Probably he would then have a requirement to give it back to the first guy, but you give it to the other guy. Or the third possibility, and that's the way we paskin, right? That you keep it yourself, chayecha kodman, your life comes first, and you drink the water rather than the other person. So chayecha kodman, your life comes first. I remember once when I was in Israel for the year, so I had cousins. I still do have cousins. I live in Rechasim. Have you heard of Rechasim? Have you heard of Kfar Hasidim?
Yeah, sure.
You heard of Kfar? Where's Kfar Hasidim?
Kfar Hasidim's in the north.
It's way up there. Yeah, yeah. It's by Haifa. It's near Haifa.
Yeah, near.
Yeah.
My wife grew up in Moshe.
So Rechasim is kind of like the sister neighborhood to Kfar Hasidim. It's not as famous because it doesn't have the same name. And there was a yeshiva in Kfar. I think the leader of Lipiansky's yeshiva was in Kfar Hasidim, I think. No, it's a Litvish community, right?
Right.
Kfar Hasidim Rishonim, you know, what the Gemara calls Hasidim.
Right.
So that's Rechasim is the neighborhood right next door. So when I visited my cousins, I don't know, two or three times over the course of the year. So you take a bus. Now you don't just take any bus. You got to take the Haredi bus. Right? You got to take the other bus to go up, and it's packed. Right, it's a 3-hour trip. Goes all the way out to Tel Aviv, then up the coast. Right, so it's a pretty long trip to take on this bus. So I'm on the way back. I recall it was Mussi Shabbos. Everybody is trying to get back. So I one of the first stops. I get a seat, and then
winter or summer.
I don't remember. Both. I don't know. So the seats all fill up, and then the row, the aisle is filled with seats. So I don't know. An hour and a half in, I say, you know, I sit here. The guy says no, but I was wondering to myself, am I required to give my seat up to somebody else? I have a seat. He doesn't. So I can give it up, but I'm not being uncomfortable. So it wasn't like it was a pregnant woman or anything, right? So I asked one of my rebbeim. He says, well, in theory, chayecha kodman. Right? There, you got to see if he doesn't. So it would be a midas chasidus to give it up, but not really required. So, okay. Anyways, that's an application of that. Chayecha kodman is not just a life, but it really does apply to across the board. Person has the right to look out for themselves. On the other hand, we have a mitzvah called lo samud al dam riecha. One is not permitted to stand idly by while another person is either dying or injured, etc. So those are the conflicts, right? My life comes first. On the other hand, I am required to help somebody else. What does that requirement go up to? Does it go up to even to the point of risking one's life? It's unclear. So I actually came across an article here by Rabbi Chaim Steinmetz. At the time, he was a rabbi in Montreal. He's now actually the rabbi in at KJ, Kilas Jeshurun, on the east side. He took over Rabbi Lichtenstein a couple of months ago. So here's an article that was on J-Law, where it must have been written a while ago, because it's talking about a story that happened in 2003, and he doesn't include the year, he just includes the date. So, you know, May 16th. So I looked online and found out it was 2003. So a couple of years back. Some people here may remember the story of Christopher Searcy, I think that's how you pronounce it. Searcy. You know the story? So he was a boy in Chicago. He was a teenage boy. He was 15 years old. He got shot. His friends schlepped him over to the hospital and brought him to a ramp that was 35 feet away from the emergency room. So the friends run in and they ask the emergency room to come out and get him. And they say, no, we're not. Hospital policy demands that we don't treat anybody outside of the door of the emergency room. So they go, they got to schlep him back, they lift him up again, and they got to bring him. By the time they actually get to attend to him, he's dead. Right? So the question, could you sue the hospital? So I actually found online, apparently the hospital had to pay $12 million in damages for this. But the way Rabbi Steinmetz describes it, they didn't break any laws. Now, again, they ended up being sued, and I'm not sure if it was a settlement or it was a judgment or whatever, but they didn't break any laws. In fact, I remember hearing when I was younger that it's very dangerous to help somebody on the street because you could get sued if you mess something up. Now, I believe many municipalities and states have passed what's called Good Samaritan laws, which if you're really just trying to do your best to help the person, so you're absolved from any lawsuit that comes after. But the question is out there, right? How much am I required to do in order to help somebody else? Okay. Yeah, that's probably because of your safety, not so much of. That's not because you don't get sued. That's because you'll mess up, and you can make matters worse, and you can interfere and all those kinds of things. Yeah.
Well, if somebody's being attacked, you have an obligation to stop the attack. That to me could be two-faced. that if you are obligated to stop the attack,
right?
And it's known that's what the policy of society. You may prevent an attack, so you're helping not to.
That could be, but are you required? Okay, but are you required to risk your life in order to do so? So there is makor. We'll start from the end, from that extreme. That yes, not only are you allowed to, not only are you supposed to, but you're even required to. What is it based? Where does that come from? So the Beis Yosef quotes a Yerushalmi. So I have to be a little careful because he doesn't actually tell you where the Yerushalmi is. He says that there is a Yerushalmi. Chasva goes. Maimonios, it is in the Kos Maimonios. The Kos Maimonios is a commentary on the Rambam representing the European approach, like the Orza, he'll quote people like the Orza Rua and that generation. I mean, the European Rishonim are being quoted on the page of the Rambam. Those are usually brought by the Hagos Maimonios. There's one on the page, and then there is a further edition called the Hagos Maimonio Constantina. Manuscript, which is in the new Frankel Rambam, is found in the back. So the Beis Yosef quotes from here, and I looked it up, it is here, that if one assists and if somebody is suffering and you don't go ahead and help him, this is what the Rambam says, and you don't go ahead and help him, you're in violation of Lo Samod Al Dam Riecha. It doesn't say you have to risk your life, it just says if all things being equal, and you don't help him out, you're in violation of that din. Comes that goes by Monios and quotes from the Yerushalmi, be Yerushalmi masik afil lahachnis atzmim b'safik sakana. One is even required to enter into a safik sakana, into a questionable, dangerous circumstance. He quotes it from the Yerushalmi. He doesn't tell you where the Yerushalmi is, right? Even the new edition doesn't tell me the Yerushalmi is. Beis Yosef as well. He quotes Kasva goes by Monios, avra al lo samod be Yerushalmi masik afil lahachnis atzmim b'safik sakana chayit. Veneer Shatam, the Beis Yosef adds a little bit, the reason being, Nishahala Vadai Vahu Suffolk, because he's definitely going to die, and you're only a Suffolk whether you're going to die. It's only a question whether you're going to die, so therefore you should do your best in order to assist him. Now, it's a little, there's two possibilities of what the case here is. Right? One possibility is, a person is going to replace themselves, enter into a Suffolk Sakana, and that person is definitely going to live. Am I required to save that other person, even if it means me risking my life? But the worst case scenario is that I'll die and they'll live. The other worst case scenario is, no, both of us will die, right? So that seems to be the case, based on what the comment of the Beis Yosef is, that seems to be the case of what the of how he's describing that Yerushalmi. One of us will definitely live. Just a question of him vadai living, or me suffik living. That's the question that is out there. But the problem is, it doesn't tell you where the Yerushalmi is. It just says there's a Yerushalmi out there. So there is no, as far as I know, there's no explicit Yerushalmi that makes this statement. This is also brought, by the way, in the Tiferes Yisrael on the first Mishnah in Maseches Peah. What in the world is it doing in the first Mishnah of Maseches Peah? So the first Mishnah of Maseches Peah is very famous. Some of us say it every day as part of Birchas HaTorah, right? These are the things that don't have a measurement. Gmilus Chasadim. Kindness for another person. There is no measurement to the amount of kindness you can give to another person. So the Tiferes Yisrael on the bottom of the large Mishnayos, this is the Mishnayos, so he comments, there may not be a measurement in terms of how much you could possibly do, but there may be a limit into how much you could possibly do. There may be a limitation on if it's or how much you're required to do of if you'll actually risk your life. Are you required? And he brings this Yerushalmi. He says, are you required to risk your life in order to do it for another person? Right? And the Maimonides quotes the Yerushalmi that says that you are required to do it. But he points out that. Not only is it unclear where this Yerushalmi is, also no other Rishonim quoted it. I mean, the Rambam didn't quote it. It's a commentary on the Rambam. The Beis Yosef quoted it, but he also doesn't quote anybody else that quotes it. So the Rush, the Rif, the Rambam, the major Rishonim, they don't quote this Yerushalmi lahalacha, and that's furthermore strengthened by the idea that we're not really sure where it is. There are those, however, that hypothesize where that Yerushalmi was. And coming in the Emek Sheila. Who is the Emek Sheila? So Emek Sheila is somebody that would quote in other contexts in this year. Emek Sheila is written by the Nitziv. What, you're doing a valley?
Yeah.
Right. The Nitziv wrote. The Nitziv wrote the Emek She'ila on the Shiltos. Some of you may have heard the story that the Nitziv, when he celebrated the completion of Emek She'ila, was, I assume, was his first sefer that he published. When he at the Siyum, when he had a party to celebrate the publication of the Sefer, so he said, "You may wonder why I'm so happy. When I was 11, 12 years old, I snuck out of my room in the middle of the night and I overheard my parents talking." Have you ever heard the story?
Yeah.
I heard my parents talking, and they were saying to each other that we might as well send him to trade school. He's never going to amount to anything in terms of learning. Let's just we'll send him to become a tailor, or send him to become a candlestick maker, blacksmith, whatever. And the Siv comes running out and says, no, he wasn't the Nitziv yet at that point, he was the Naftali Tzvi. Comes out and says, no, I'm going to reassert myself, I'm going to, don't take me out of yeshiva, I want to stay in yeshiva. And he goes on and tells the story that imagine if I would have just listened to my parents and gone to trade school, I would have gone to Shemayim, I would have gone to the heavens, and they would have said to me, "Nu, where's your commentary on the Shiltos?" And I would have shrugged my shoulders and say, "What in the world are you talking about?" And they might have said, "Where's your commentary on the Chumash?" He said, "What do you mean, I'm a poor blacksmith, what was I supposed to do?" Right, so now I'm able to answer that kasha. I'm now able to realize what my potential is. So, you've heard that story? Anybody else ever heard that story? No? You've heard, okay. Famous story out there about the Nitziv. All right, so anyways, he says, no, I found the source. I found the Yerushalmi of that. It's a Yerushalmi in Maseches Terumos, that Rav Imi was captured and was in great danger. Rav Yonasan gave up all hope. Rav Yonasan said, "We're not going to be able to save him." Reish Lakish, on the other hand, said, "No, either I'll kill him or they're going to kill me. I'm going to go and save him." So he went and he appeased the captors and they freed Rav Imi. That's the Gemara. Now, is that exactly what the Yerushalmi said? Do we learn from here?
First of all, forgive me for my... Reish Lakish, the one that was the highwayman?
Yes, Reish Lakish was a highway robber, a murderer, a gladiator.
Right. This guy's not the average guy on the street.
He's not the... That's true. He's not the average guy on the street.
He's done things like this before.
That's true, but it doesn't...
I mean, I got so many... 50 Japanese
bookstores.
No.
Okay.
We'll
say that for when we're off tape. But Reish Lakish is risking his life. I mean, Reish Lakish does say, "I'm risking my life in order to do this." Right? Is that a proof, however, for our halacha that you are required to risk one's life in order to go and right? Why is it not a proof, Bruce?
I don't know. I would say it's just not a good example.
He volunteered, right? Who said he had to?
Yeah.
Right? What's the biggest proof that he didn't have to? That somebody else disagreed. Rav Yonasan said, "I ain't going."
Yeah.
Right? So does that mean Rav Yonasan was wrong? Right? So that is pointed to as you see that you're required to do it, and at least there is a statement in Yerushalmi of Reish Lakish, of somebody risking their life in order to do it, but A, it's unclear whether we pass it like Reish Lakish, right? Just because he did it doesn't mean that we're asking that way. And second of all, it doesn't necessarily mean that he had to. It could just mean that they went out of way in order to do it. Moshe killed the Egyptian. He risked his life in order to save another.
The Ezra says that he looked around and saw nobody was stepping up. So there's no man, you need them.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. Maybe we'll do this again when we get up to Shmos Perek Beis. Is it Perek Aleph or Perek Beis? I forgot. Yes, it's true. Okay. But again, you don't have a proof that he had to. You just have a proof that he could. Right. Okay, but at least we have that out there. So, however, there are poskim that say that no. There are Gemaras in the Bavli that disagree with the Yerushalmi. Why don't we pass them like that? So one is, it's unclear what the Gemara is saying. Right? Another reason is, the Bavli, when you have a Machlokas Bavli and Yerushalmi, we pass them like the Bavli over the Yerushalmi. Now this doesn't, we don't necessarily have an explicit Gemara from the Bavli against the Yerushalmi, but the Bavli just mention it. So that's not necessarily a proof. But there are Achron that went to work and tried to find the Gemaras that seem to go against this Yerushalmi. And they found a few. Now, all of these are somewhat problematic because they're all stories. Right? Whenever, or not exactly being you know, they're being darshened out of the Gemara. Like, I'll quote two of these Gemaras. Right? But it's always a little unclear, how do we paskin based on a narrative in the Gemara? Right? We just noticed that it's a little difficult to paskin based on the narrative in the Yerushalmi. What about this one? So there is a story in Gemara in Nida, the Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. This Gemara is very famous for a few reasons. It's famous because it's also one of the Lashon Hara Gemaras. It's a Gemara about how do we accept, do we believe when we're told Lashon Hara about somebody else. So first, the police are searching for this Jewish person. Plus, he was rumored to have killed somebody. So this person came to Rabbi Tarfon and asked Rabbi Tarfon to hide him. So Rabbi Tarfon says that he doesn't know what to do. Right? If he didn't hide him, then he's going to be caught. But on the other hand, if he did, right, we're going to get in trouble because we listened to the Lashon Hara. About you. However, but maybe we're supposed to take it into account. So therefore, he didn't know what to do. I mean, on one hand, we heard you're a murderer. On the other hand, maybe you're not a murderer. I only know you're a murderer because of the Lashon Hara that's being said about you. On the other hand, I'm allowed to believe it once you're putting my life in danger. And if they catch you, and I was hiding a murderer, so I'm going to be killed also. So he closes the door and doesn't let them in the house. That's what the Gemara says. And, so the Rishonim say I'm looking here in the Nishmas Avram. So he quotes from the Tosfos and the Rush. I'm sorry, not that. All right, so it's a machlokes Rishonim whether he was forbidden to save them or whether he just wasn't required to save them. So Rashi and Miri say that he was forbidden, and others say that he just wasn't required. Now, one of the reasons that you might be forbidden, by the way, I was thinking, I didn't see this inside, is that what's the problem with them killing him? I mean, if this person was really a murderer, why shouldn't the Roman government be allowed to kill him?
We're assuming he's a Jew. That's
even if he was Jewish. I mean, if I know somebody in the Jewish community,
you won't get the fair treatment if you're Jewish.
So maybe that's it, right? That could be an answer, that he wasn't going to get a fair trial. But in America, if I know that you could turn in a Jew to the authorities. But when they're considered dangerous, that's going to look bad on us. Assuming you live in a just society, so I believe Poskim have Pasuk in America is considered a just society, a lot better off than many are in the past. What? So far, so good. Yes. Okay. Others point out that this Galilean, right, this person who was running away, that might be worse, because he brought it upon himself. Meaning, if a person is captured and he's being held captive, so that might be one thing. But if the other person did an action and therefore he's being pursued, so that perhaps is going to make the idea worse. So again, that might be probably that indicates that one is not obligated to save the person, but there might be exceptions to the rule. There is another Gemara that says a Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph that asks this question based on this: how do I know that if a person sees their friend drowning or being dragged away, that I'm required to save him? And the Gemara gives an answer, right, that we quoted before: Lo samod al dam riach. One should not stand idly by while their friend is being while the blood of the friend is flowing. So the Agudas Ezov asks, well, I should have known that halacha from something else. How should I have known that halacha? The general mitzvah of Hashabbos Haneda, returning things to them. Right? I should know that based on other principles. Why do I need this specific Gemara? The Gemara itself asks that question. I'm sorry. The Gemara itself asks, I should know this from other places. So Gemara says, no, it means we learn out from this Gemara that not only am I required to save them, I'm even required to spend money in order to save them. Now, they're actually going to be required to pay me back, but I'm required to spend money in order to save the life of that person.
So, I'll back to the other example with the person who might be a murderer. Isn't that not giving the benefit of the doubt? Not only a Lashon Hara, but you're not giving the benefit of the doubt.
Right, but I'm still allowed to take it into account. I'm rumors about a person I'm allowed to take into account. A person is rumored to be a murderer, so I it's Lashon Hara. Yes, no, I'm allowed to believe it. That's the Gemara about Gedalia, right? That Gedalia didn't believe that people were going to assassinate him, but yet he should have, and the Gemara is critical of him, that he should have at least taken into account that such thing is possible. I mean, you could be nervous about something without believing it, without technically believing it. That's what's expected, okay? I don't know you did it. I'm not saying that you're an evil person, but I'm not letting you into my house because it's a danger. Okay, so the Gemara itself answers and says, oh, it teaches that one is even required to spend money in order to save the life of another person. So says the Agudas Sezov, which is quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva in the Shulchan Aruch. The Agudas Sezov says, wait a second, why did the Gemara say that we learn from this pasuk that I'm even required to risk my life in order to save the other person? From the fact that the Gemara doesn't say that indicates that I'm not required to risk my life in order to save the life of the other person. That's the answer. There's one further possibility that's thrown out by the Minchas Chinuch, who asks the question on this entire premise. The Minchas Chinuch quotes this whole story, points out that the Rishon disagree with it, and he says, and I have a question on this Yerushalmi, right? That came into Rak Lav Inu Osa Maisa Klal Ba'avaras Alav Lami Yischayv L'Hachnis Achlu V'Safik Sekana. Right? What is my halachic requirement right now? What is my halachic obligation with regards to this person who is suffering? For the person who is suffering, it needs to be saved. What is my halachic connection with him? Right? I have a mitzvah of Lo Samar Al Dabriyacha. I have a mitzvah of saving his life. Right? Am I required to risk my life in order to do a mitzvah? No. That's the general halacha. So the Minchas Chinuch says, just logically, why should this be? Why should a person be required in order to risk one's life in order to save another person? So the Minchas Chinuch closes by saying, "Tzarachin." So I have a question on it. He says, "Ach emes dinze mevi the goes by Moses v'shem Yerushalmi shvichem anu lekabel beima." However, this is brought by the goes by Moni in the name of the Yerushalmi. It doesn't quote a Yerushalmi; just says it's quoted in the name of the Yerushalmi, and therefore required we should accept it with fear, you know, beima, with awe, with reverence. Mikomakum lemais tzarachin. And he said, that's why I think none of the Rishonim quoted it. Because it doesn't work. It doesn't fit within our halachic principles that we have in other circumstances. Ah, so the next question then, is it permitted? So there are...
The inclusion is not required. That's
right, so, well, the way we pask in this matter is that it's not required. Right? There might be an exception to the rule that we'll quote shortly. A few exceptions to that rule. You know, let's just do it now. There might be a few exceptions to that rule, A, in terms of wartime. Right? So, the Minchas Chinuch asks in a different place, we have a mitzvah of going to war sometimes. Right. How can you ever go to war? You're putting your life in danger. So the Minchas Chinuch says that's the way the mitzvah works. there's no other way around it, which has then modern day applications of what is the status of Eretz Yisrael, of Medinas Yisrael right now. Right? So Rav Schechter has an article in the Kvayat Zon where he writes that Israel has been in a constant state of war since 1948, and really before 1948.
Right. Right?
They've been in a constant state of war, and he quotes a couple of sources to prove that Israel really has never been at peace. In a constant state of war, and therefore the laws of Milchama apply, not the regular laws of this. So therefore, you know, Israeli soldier putting their life in danger in order to save another person. You know, I mentioned I'm in the middle of reading. I'm up to Shabbos already with the Operation Thunderbolt. Don't tell me the conclusion, right? But what happened there, right? You have 200 people that lives are in danger. They did a separation. Everybody realized that they separated the Jews from the non-Jews. They let the non-Jews go, and they pretty much only had Jews left at the end. What's the obligation of saving them? So the obligation, or what is the allowance to save them? Right? It's crazy what they did. It worked. It's crazy. Right? They put their lives in danger. Yoni Netanyahu died, right? Yoni Netanyahu, did he do the right thing? So the answer is that one approach for sure is that Israel's in a state of war. If Israel loses this, it's a major problem for them, and if they negotiate and give everyone up, then they put many other people's lives in danger. And they had to go ahead and do it, and that's part of the way that's part of the halacha of using. I came across Rabbi Jachter has an article about Jews living in Yesha. What is the issue with Jews living in Yesha? So is it permitted to live in a settlement, not just one of the close, safe settlements, but like one of the far-out settlements? Is there permissibility to that? So he suggests, based on an article from a Rav Lior, that they are that having these settlements that are further out there are providing for some amount of security. Some would argue that they're arguing for no security, but they are providing for security for greater Israel. And therefore, while you wouldn't require anybody to live out there, one would be permitted to go and live out there. And right, similarly to visiting Israel in times of war, right, it's also considered a good thing. It helps when people visit, even though it might be a little bit of a more dangerous time in Israel. There is a further question out there also with regards to doctors. Our doctors have to treat patients in a very difficult environment, in a very contagious environment. So nowadays they put on hazmat suits and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, in Europe, in the 100 years ago, there were these cholera outbreaks. There was actually Rabbi Akiva Eiger won a medal from the Prussian government because of his heroism in the face of a cholera epidemic in his town. He set up a hospital, and he did a lot of very interesting things that we don't necessarily think about when we just see his name on the page of Shulchan Aruch. But he actually was significantly honored by his government for some of the things that took place. So is a doctor saying, well, I'm out of here, right? Or maybe a doctor is required to put his life in danger in order to treat various patients. Okay, so what about, so this might be cases where a person would be required. What about, is it optional? So there is a Ritbaz that has the following idea. What about I'll save his life, but you got to give up your arm. That's the Shaila that the Ritbaz has. So hold on the organ donation. But I believe you're going to give up your arm. So Rabbi says that's crazy. You're not required to do that. You shouldn't do that. If somebody goes ahead and does that, it's a chassid shota. Now that's a significant danger to a person's life in the Ritbaz's time, the 1400s in Egypt, right? There's another Ritbaz, however, that says, no, you're allowed to risk one's life in order to, you're permitted to. And his examples that he then has are, giving blood, things like that. Nowadays not, but a person's being attacked by a wild animal, a person's drowning, that's the classic case of drowning. So are you allowed to? So Rabbi says you're allowed to. So how do you resolve it? So most resolve it by saying, well, it depends what the level of risk is. To cut off your limb, that's pretty crazy, right? But to jump into the lake to try to save a person that's drowning, or to jump into a lake to save a person from an alligator, right? Think about that. Then also in current events, right? So that would be permissible, maybe not required, but permissible. And I would add, though, that a person who has that as their job, I mean, that's also a person trained as a firefighter, then they all of a sudden get their first call and they show up to a burning house. Whoa! I didn't know that I had to do that. Right, so if a person has already signed up for it, so the requirements are therefore going to be much more greater, especially because they've signed up for it, they've agreed to do it, and the community has invested money in their training and paying them their salary and things of that nature. There is a proof that the Nishmas Avram quotes with regards to, we do analyze levels of safety, and that is, there's a mission in the beginning in the fifth parak of Brachos that if there's a snake crawling up a person's leg, so you shouldn't interrupt your Shemot Esrei, but if you have a scorpion, you should. So what's the distinction? That scorpions are considered much more dangerous than snakes, and then the applicability, this has been talked about, although the truth is nowadays it might not be as relevant, but the issue of kidney donations, this comes up, right? Organ donations usually are taken from a person who's dead already, but what about a kidney donation where you give up a kidney in order to save the life of another? And you have two, right? So you are A, risking your life by the surgery, and B, you're risking your life going forward, that, you know, now you only have one strike and you're out as opposed to two strikes and you're out. So is that permissible? So Rav Moshe has a tshuva, actually with Bedavar Hashtelas Halev L'chol, about heart transplants, but during the context of that he discusses this issue, and he says that you're not chai, I can't say that you're chai to do it, but Mikol Makom Rishai, one is permitted to do it, and that I believe is the general psak. Tzitzel Eliezer says this, and he in the Nishma, and put some other poskim as well, that while we wouldn't obligate a person to put their life in significant danger in order to save the life of another person, we would say that one is permitted to, and perhaps even put it at the status of laudatory in order to do such things. What? Tchias HaMeisim. What about Tchias HaMeisim?
Well, if you give your organs.
Oh, yeah, I think with all things Tchias HaMeisim, kind of shrug our shoulders and say, we don't, you know, that's not really going to impact our halakhic thing. There is some halakhic effect that is the issue of cutting off the corner of a talus or not. Whether when we bury somebody, we bury them in their talus, and then there's a dispute about whether you should cut off the talus or not. So part of which revolves around the person's going to get up and look around and say,
Where'd my talus go?
Go four
paces.
Right. On the other hand, maybe you shouldn't, because it's called loig l'rush, that it's that a person's supposed to. This is certainly the halach. When a person goes to a cemetery, they're supposed to tuck in their tzitzis, which is considered loig l'rush in front of the people that are dead. He says, no, but this guy gets to wear do mitzvahs, and we don't get to do mitzvahs anymore. So that those two balance each other. There's a whole story with the Vilna Gaon that he, I forget which way he wanted or he didn't. I think he didn't want it. He gave instructions to some guy, and then when the Chevra Kedisha was burying him, that guy happened to not be in the room at the time, and the time he came back, they had already wrapped him up, and he starts yelling, and they say, no, you weren't in the room, sorry, you know, it's a simon from Shemayim that we're not supposed to do it, or something. Anyway, so those are some of the issues in regards to these matters.